This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm your host, Mac Pritchard. I'm also the publisher of Mac's List, an online community that connects talented professionals with meaningful work. I believe everyone can find a job they love. But to do that, you need to learn the skills to build a successful career. From professional networking to personal branding, you've got to get good at job hunting. This show helps you do this. Every week on Find Your Dream Job, I talk to a different career expert. We discuss the tools and tactics you need to find your dream job. Before we get started, though, I want to ask a favor. I want to give you the most useful job search advice I can. To help do this, we're doing a short listener survey. We want to know what you like and don't like about the show. And we want to hear your ideas for topics we should cover in future episodes. We also want to get to know you better. It's a quick poll with just a handful of questions. And I'd be grateful if you filled it out. And if you do so, you'll be eligible to win a $50 Amazon gift card. Just go to maxlist.org/findyourdreamjobsurvey. And please let us hear from you by November 20th, 2018. Thanks in advance. And now let's get back to the show. Our guest this week is Dr. C.K. Bray. He's an expert in career development who helps you deal with all aspects of corporate life, including job search, promotion, and layoffs. C.K. says many people he works with dread job interviews. And it's not surprising why. The importance of a job interview could make anyone feel anxious or pressured. But C.K. says you can not only manage these feelings, you can also take steps to stand out from other applicants, and you can even make the interviewer like you. First, says C.K., you need to address the fear you may feel. After you deal with your own concerns, you can create ways to make yourself likable. And finally, he advises, you need to go into the interview with stories that show why you're the right person for the job. Want to learn more? Join me in the MaxList studio as I talk with Dr. C.K. Bray about how to make yourself unforgettable in a job interview. Now let's turn to this week's guest expert, Dr. C.K. Bray. C.K. Bray is CEO and founder of the Adaption Institute. It provides science-based solutions for organizations experiencing change. C.K. and his team help clients with organization, employee, and customer change initiatives. C.K. is also a career development expert. His first book, Best Job Ever, was a USA Today bestseller, and he hosts the podcast Career Revolution. Every week, C.K. shares advice on how to look for work, get promoted, and deal with being fired or laid off. He joins us today from Gilbert, Arizona. C.K., thanks for being on the show.
Hey, Mac. Thanks for having me today.
Well, it's a pleasure. And our topic this week, as you know, is how to be unforgettable in a job interview. And obviously, we mean this in a positive way. You don't want to be that disastrous job interview that people are still talking about years later. And when you have written and spoken about this, C.K., you recommend to do this, people need to think about a few factors: how to manage stress and fear, how to make themselves likable. And also, you talk about the importance of telling career stories that engage interviewers. Let's start with stress and fear, because I think those are common reactions when people are thinking about an interview and even when they're in the interview room, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Because we've come so far with understanding the science and psychology of what interviewing is for both sides of an interview process. So for the interviewee and the interviewer, there's a cognitive science part of what's happening in your brain, what's being categorized, but also on the psychological side, it's what happening, just as you brought up, with fear and anxiety. Am I communicating correctly? And the science has just taken leaps and bounds in the past, you know, couple of years in what's happening during an interview, which then gives us a lot of information of what things we can do to better create, as you said, that environment where we're presenting our best selves.
So why are interviews so stressful, CK? Why do people have that reaction that science is documenting?
Oh, that is such a good question. And a lot of the stress and the level of the stress depends on, do I have a job currently and I'm just looking to switch and jump to something, you know, something new. So that way I have funds coming in. I can pay my house or my rent, my car payment, or take a vacation. The stress really goes up when two factors. One, I don't have a job and I need to get a job. Or number two, I'm in trouble in my current job or position. And I know that I don't have that much longer left. So the anxiety goes up. And when the anxiety goes up, we know communication, the ability to, you know, really provide clear, concise, well thought out answers just plummets through the floor. And we aren't our best selves. We aren't able to say the, you know, the things that we would like to say in a way that we'd like to say them.
And so there are these external factors that create stress before you walk into the interview room. Do you find, CK, that interviewers, hiring managers also deliberately create stress?
Oh, absolutely. So let's talk about, you know, Mac, it's such a good question. Let's talk about what happens when an interview first begins. So what happens is when the interviewee walks in and the interviewers are sitting there, now they've talked before, obviously, and they've discussed the type of person they're looking for, and they've looked at most likely your resume before you've walked in to see, you know, what are some of the strengths and what are some of the areas that may be weak areas. But what happens on the cognitive side is when an individual walks into an interview, is their brains are automatically categorizing that person who's coming in for the interview. So they're categorizing them as a friend or a foe. Now, what we found that's fascinating about this is that depending on whether they've categorized them as a friend or a foe will mean what parts of their brain they're using during the interview when they're asking the interviewee those questions. So it can have a strong determinant during that first 45 seconds when you're being categorized, if you're coming in for that interview, where you can make a big difference in how that interview goes based upon how the brain of the interviewer has categorized you.
So let's break this into two parts. Let's talk first, CK, about what someone can do before they walk into that interview in order to manage their own internal stress and cope with their fear and anxiety. And then let's also talk about how people can put their best foot forward so when they meet the interviewers, they're sending signals that are going to trigger a positive reaction. Why don't we start with the first part?
All right, so the first part is what can you do before you actually walk in an interview? Now, it's going to sound funny when I say this, but as you're beginning, obviously, you want to calm down, take deep breaths. It's a very stressful situation. You're in a fight or flight mode. The amygdala is going crazy. And there's a lot of chemicals and things that are happening that cause you, as I said, to go to that fight or flight state. So it's really just calming down, making sure that you're set. Now, that's a very easy thing to say and a very, very difficult thing to do. So one way that we found that really helps individuals calm down is as you're entering, as you're meeting the interviewers, We do what we call middle of the road. You want to be very middle of the road. Now, that doesn't sound like something that you want to be, but we're talking about your facial expressions, how happy you are, how outgoing you are. You want to be very polite. You want to be smiling, but you don't want to be too much of that because then it comes off fake or it looks like you're not being authentic. You know, also, you don't want to be too nervous. You want to be quiet long enough. You want to look at them in the eye. So it's just being very middle of the road of the behaviors. Because what you're going to do when you come in is you're then going to realize and talk and scan the environment and the individuals and decide, oh, they're a very peppy group. You know, they're a very happy, outgoing group. I need to up it and mirror their behavior. On the other hand, the interviewers may be very quiet and somber. Now, that means we may need to tone back a little bit. We don't need to mirror that exactly. People might think we're boring or, you know, we're not enthused about the job, but we need to mirror oftentimes the behavior of the interviewer, which in turn then as we begin the process, it seems within the first 2 minutes, most of our brains and the psychological aspects of our bodies then begin to calm down and then we can really get into the interview. So that's what I would do during the first part.
Okay. So take steps before you walk into the room to relax and deal with any anxiety or fear you may be experiencing. And then when you walk into the room, read the group, and you want to mirror their temperament and behavior, not in order to be, and you want to do that in an authentic way, don't you, CK?
Yeah. And let me throw one other thing in there.
Sure.
One of the best ways that you can remain calm before the interview is your preparation. And just to say 30 seconds on that. So to make sure you know a lot about the company, that you've looked up and done research on the person who's interviewing you. You know, oftentimes you don't have everybody's name and position, but you may have the person who's interviewing you. But then also to have, and we'll talk about this, but what are your stories that you have prepared? Examples of your past work experience. We call them your narratives, and we'll talk about that in a second. But the more that you're prepared, the more calm you're going to be, because you feel like, I'm set, I'm ready to go. I don't know the questions, but I've prepared enough about this company, about my experience, what matches the job description that they gave me, to go in and really have a firm grasp and handle on, you know, some of the questions and how you're going to present yourself.
All right. So not only will you be more effective in the discussions and displaying your knowledge and your interests, but there's a behavioral benefit as well, both to you and in the signals you're sending to the interview panel, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes we send great signals, and sometimes we send very mixed signals. And that's why at the beginning of the interview, it's very, you know, it's very good just to be, like I said, you don't never want to be mediocre, but to be middle of the road, just so you can assess the situation and the individuals, and then take steps, you know, as we said before, to not just mirror, but then keep the tone and the beat and the speed of the interview right along with the interviewers.
Well, let's talk about, we've talked about fear and stress and anxiety. Let's talk about likability. CK, and tell me more about this. It's not about being a hail fellow, well-met backslapper, but what do you mean by likability, and how can people both display it and create it?
Okay, this is one of my favorite topics. So if I go on too long, you just stop me, Mac. What's been done, a lot of research has been done around this, and we've even videotaped interviews to see what happens during different parts of the interview when conversations occur. So we know that there's a lot of unconscious bias or implicit bias that plays a role in how we communicate, make decisions, and the behaviors that we have when we're working with other individuals or other humans. But what we found is that when an interview begins, as I said, you're judged as a friend or a foe cognitively by the interviewer. But as the conversations begin and those individuals get to know you, or individual gets to know you better, then what happens is a similarity bias can occur. Sometimes it's referred to as affinity bias. So people like people who are similar to them. Now, a lot of individuals, when we ask interviewers before they went in and did interviews, you know, are you at all subject to this unconscious bias of similarity bias? Do you think you on a scale that you're somewhat, you know, it can be tipped if you like the person? Most people would say, no, not at all. I'm looking for competencies and skill sets and strengths and a good match for our organization. Well, what's been found is in videotapes, when we're actually videotaping the interview, that the moment there's a connection, now the connection could be people went to the same school, they have the same hobbies, you know, they both like golf or tennis or cooking or gardening or triathlons, whatever it is, or maybe they grew up in the same state or there's some type of similarity. What we notice happening is the interviewer then begins to change their behavior, how they ask the questions to the interviewee, and then how they let them get away with some of the responses. So there's a strong affinity there for that similarity bias. So what we do is oftentimes companies will bring us in and have us, hey, how do we stop this from occurring? But on the other hand, individuals will say, teach us how to create this similarity bias, because once there's a similarity between the interviewer and the interviewee, oh, you're in good. And we've all experienced that. The moment you start talking to someone and things go well, oh, you're like, I'm killing the interview. Even if your answers are not the best. In fact, one more little bit of research for you, Mac, is during an interview, after the interview is over, some of the researchers had the interviewers rate how did the interviewee do, you know, according to the content, their skill sets, you know, and ask them different questions. What was found is the interviewer, if they had an affinity bias, rated them close to 20 to 25% higher on that scale versus those that didn't have an affinity or similarity bias. So it does play a strong role. And people hate to hear that, because you want to feel like you go into an interview and people are, you know, hey, I'm being judged for what I've done in the past, for who I am and for what I bring to the organization. Oh, Mac, there's so much more than that that goes into that and how decisions are made.
Okay, well, let's pause here, CK, because I do want to dig into this. I can imagine listeners wondering, well, how do I both find those similarities and share them? But I can also imagine people are thinking to themselves right now, oh my gosh, I'm doomed. I'm nothing like the people who are sitting across from me in the interview panel. And I don't have a chance in the world. And I know from your work that that's not the case. There are ways to address that. And I want to talk more about that. How's that sound?
Great.
Okay. We're going to pause and we'll be back in just a moment. Stop me if you've heard this before in a job interview. Tell me about a time when you had to pick between two bad options. Or how about this one? Discuss a time when your integrity was challenged. How did you handle it? Even if you haven't had a hiring manager ask you these questions, they probably sound familiar. That's because employers want you to share examples of your experience. So they ask behavioral interview questions. These questions often start with phrases like, tell me about a time when, or give me an example of, or perhaps describe a situation. Do you recognize the format now? Here's the problem for you as a candidate. You can't script answers to every possible behavioral interview question. You need a repeatable strategy that you can use in any situation. And that's why I created my new guide, 100 Behavioral Interview Questions You Need to Know. Now, I give you a list of the most common questions, and that'll be helpful to you. But I also share a four-step process for answering any behavioral question. Get your copy of this guide today. It's free. Go to maxlist.org/questions. Now, there's an infinite number of behavioral interview questions, and my strategy will give you the tool you need to answer any of them. Go to maxlist.org/questions. Don't walk into that next interview unprepared. Go to maxlist.org/questions. Now, let's get back to the show. We're back at the MaxList studio, and our guest this week is Dr. C.K. Bray. He's the CEO and founder of the Adaption Institute. He also hosts the weekly podcast, Career Revolution. Now, C.K., our topic this week, of course, is how to be unforgettable in an interview. And we were talking about the research that you've done and examined on what you call similarity bias, the what happens when your job candidate, you're sitting across the room from one or more interviewers, and the reaction that happens when people see that there are things that you have in common, and that can be both a plus and a minus, can it, CK?
Absolutely. It's a plus if you get into the interview, and let's talk about what interviewees can do. The moment you walk in, as you begin to make connections with individuals, as you have this small talk of, you know, how's the weather, or, you know, how was your drive in, or thanks for waiting so much, that as you begin to have that conversation, you know, obviously the brain is deciphering for those interviewers, hey, is this a friend or a foe? Is this someone who's possible? That you can create similarity bias by just even agreeing. You know, people say it's a nice, beautiful day. Absolutely, it's a beautiful day. Now, to us talking like this, it doesn't seem like it would make a difference. But people like to be assured. People like people to agree with what they're saying. So even in those first few minutes, you can set and begin that similarity bias. But once the interview begins, really what an interviewee can do is they can, you know, they're asked questions. If the interviewer, the person asking the questions, ask any questions that, oh, they can jump on and there's some type of similarity there. Oh, I've had that experience, or I worked at that organization, or I know that individual. They need to highlight that in their response and in their answer, because then what happens is it begins to build that bond between the two individuals.
So let's talk about the kinds of similarities that candidates should look for. And I'm assuming that part of this, and you mentioned this in the first half of the show, is doing the homework, knowing who's going to be in the room if you can, finding out if you went to similar schools or have share common hobbies, or perhaps you lived in the same part of the country at one time. And then in addition to doing the homework before you walk into the room, what kind of questions or things can you do to draw to find those similarities before you begin the formal interview, or perhaps during the course of it.
Okay, let's unpack that just kind of step by step. What are some of the best types of most influential, we should say, affinity bias that's there? The number one thing you can do is people. So if you know similar people, individuals who the person asking the questions, the interviewer, then you need to bring those individuals up. Now, hopefully they like you and hopefully they're going to say something nice about you, because you know the moment you walk out of the interview, someone's going to text or call that individual and say, hey, what did you think of Dr. Bray? You know, do you know a little bit about, you know, what he's done for work or his experience? So people's is one of the strongest links to similarity bias. Now, another one is jobs. That would be in the top five. Do we have similar experiences, you know, in the same marketplace? Now, the third is experience. Now, experience being, like I said before, is it a hobby that you enjoy? Do you do something that's very similar? One of the best things is sporting teams. If you like the same sporting team and you see it up on the wall or something, and you can talk, you know, you can talk to that clearly, then it's a great similarity bias. So you want to bring those out. Now, let's tell you what that does, or share with you what that does is not only does it create the similarity bias, but it makes the individual very comfortable with you. Because what they're thinking is, if you like that and I like that, then you must be like me. And the moment and the more you can do, the more you're like me and you must be like me, the better oftentimes the interview is going to go.
Okay. Now, what about the people who are listening right now and thinking, well, I'm in the candidate's chair, I'm looking across the table, and those people don't look anything like me. They're a different gender, and I'm struggling to find something in common. What advice would you give?
You know, that's one of the hardest things, because as a person who's being interviewed, you don't know the background most of the time, the history, you know, the job experience, the education of those people who are interviewing you. So now I often tell people, you know, looks can be deceiving, meaning some people are really kind, they're really nice, they're really outgoing, but they feel like in an interview, they have to be stern or somber, you know, especially if they're managers in the room or some of their counterparts. So they may be playing a part. So just because they look serious and they don't look like they're involved in what you're saying, then it doesn't necessarily mean that the interview isn't going well. But one of the best ways that research has shown to bring and draw people out, and if there's anything that the listeners remember from this podcast, this is the one thing to remember. I've spent about 20 years studying this. It's the narrative. It's the stories that they bring. So oftentimes in interviews, one of the biggest mistakes that the people who want the job make is that they tell experiences, but they don't tell a story. They don't link it to a story. Now, we know stories and narratives go back, you know, just hundreds and hundreds of years. That's how oftentimes history was passed down through stories. So if there's something in the human brain that loves stories, that's why we read books. That's why we love going to movies, is because we love the story. So as people prep and prepare for their interviews, one thing that I not just caution, but just heed you to really practice, is make sure you have a story around it. Now, a lot of people use, and you've heard this before, like the STAR format, the situation, the task, the action and result. But what I often say is create a story around it that is brief, that's concise, that doesn't go on too long. That's one of the deaths of people who tell too much of a story, is it goes on too long. But a really brief, well-informed story, then what it does is it draws people in, because they want to know what happened. What work did you do? How did it end up, as you create that story? And that's something that people have to really practice, but it's so impactful in people remembering you, because it's just like this. So let's say my spouse says, Chris, I need you to run to the grocery store and I need you to get eggs, milk, and butter. You know, then when we get to number four, the whole family's going to scream out, you better text dad, or, you know, he's never going to remember.
Right.
But here's the difference. So if my wife then says, oh, Chris, we're making cookies. Oh, we're going to make delicious chocolate chip cookies. We need to take some to the neighbor. We're going to have some for dessert tonight. So make sure that you get the eggs, milk, and butter for the cookies. Now think about this. My memory, just even my short-term memory, is going to remember those three things, because it's a story. We're doing something. It's cookies. There's a reward at the end. There's just a much different experience for the brain, for the emotions of the interviewer, that comes through those stories. And it moves people and helps people remember you.
What I like about the example you just shared, CK, is the story has a structure. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm-hmm. You're going to go out. You're going to do the shopping. You're going to come back. You and your family are going to make the cookies. And then finally, the result is you'll share them with neighbors. What structure do you think people, particularly job candidates, should follow when they're sitting in that interview room and they have to tell a career story?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's put a time frame around it. It shouldn't last anything more than, I might say, a minute to 2 minutes. It needs to be very short. Now, if they're being asked questions, obviously it will go on a bit longer. But what needs to happen, much as I said, is you need to have, and I love how you said it, a beginning, middle, and end, meaning you need to explain the situation. What is the situation so that you can give them the background of the story? Then some of the things that you did, what were some of the actions that you took, some of the barriers or some of the, you know, the action items that you had to take to make this project or, you know, the work successful. And then what you need to do is you need to really talk about the result and how it affected you. So you're giving information, you're letting people know in the interview, and you know they're jotting down notes and it's giving them information. But then what you're doing is you're attaching the human element on it with, here's the result and here's how it affected me. Here's what I learned and it was difficult and I learned, you know, things about myself. And you, the more human you can make it and the more authentic the story, then the better the story's going to be. Now, we want to be careful. We want to be in the middle again. We don't want to be where, you know, we're winning the lottery and we're so excited, you know, that we're thrilled and we're on the edge of our chairs. But yet we don't want to make it too somber of a story. You don't want people to leave, you know, with tears in their eyes and need a Kleenex. You want it right in the middle that has ups and downs. Here's some of the great points of what happened. Here were some of the hard times. And here's what it meant to me. And those stories, people remember them for the 2 to 3 weeks that you need them to remember those stories, so they remember you.
Agreed. And just a tactical suggestion, I love the structure that you shared. When people want to talk about the result, one thing I've seen candidates do effectively is say, when they want to sum up the result, they'll use the sentence, "I tell you this story because."
Mm-hmm. And that's great.
Yeah. And it also helps kind of the speaker, I think, manage their time too, because they realize, I expect that they've got to wrap it up.
that's yeah. A cue, because that is the one thing I warn people about over and over, is make sure the story is concise and to the point, because you'll lose people if it goes on too long. They'll get bored, just like a bad movie. You know, even a bad trailer. Trailers are what, 2 minutes long? If it's a bad trailer, all of a sudden you're picking up the phone, you're talking to the person you went to the movie with. So it has to be short, concise, to the point, and impactful.
Okay. There's one more question I want to ask you, but again, I think you've done a great job of laying this out. Pay attention to your fears and anxieties, manage them, and before you walk in the room, but in part by doing your homework, but also by paying attention to your behavior when you enter that interview room, and then pay attention to what you can do to create, I know what you call formally similarity bias, those common connections that will lead to likability, and then have that story ready. I also know, CK, that you think it's important for the candidate to walk into the room with some questions too. Tell me more about why that's important.
The questions at the end, it's really the bow to the end of the interviewer. So a lot of people will look at, a lot of interviewers or organizations will look not so much at the answers, you know, like when the interviewee begins to ask those questions, but they want to see the content of the questions. Did they, you know, did they research us? Do they know the business that we're doing? Do we know a lot about the position? So they're judging you on those questions. So you have to have some really well thought out, well researched questions. Now, oftentimes the number I give people is you don't need any more than five. You'll probably be allowed to ask two or three questions. So some really good questions that show you've done your homework, that you really want to know. You know, you really want to know these questions, because the authenticity of asking questions that you want to know more about the position. I tell people to be very careful about playing the questions such as, you know, what do you do for individuals who are top performers? Now, that may be a question that you ask further down the line in the interview process, not something you want to ask initially. You know, you want to know more about the position, about the organization, the culture, you know, where's the organization going? What's the market like? So really think out those questions. Now, remember too, that they're more high level questions. The longer you go and the more interviews you have, then those questions begin to come down and you get in the grassroots of it and you get, you know, really get in the weeds of what you really need to know about the job. You know, what does it pay? What's the vacation? What types of things here? And when people ask those questions at the very first interview, I always just kind of shake my head and say, no, let's start high. Let's inform you about the organization and your team that you'd be working with before we get into the you part of it.
Okay. Excellent advice. Now tell us, CK, what's next for you?
Oh, we're always trying to expand and grow, right? That's what we're doing, Mac. Lots of great things on the horizon. So we have the current, you know, podcast, which is The Career Revolution with Dr. CK Bray. We are starting a new, and I'm going to say January 1st of 2019 is a new podcast called Spark a Genius. Now, the difference between the two is the podcast we have now, I don't interview. I just provide information about careers and life and put some science in there as well. What the Spark of Genius is Spark of Genius is we're bringing in individuals from all walks of life and we're asking them questions, not only about what they've accomplished, what they do, but how they got there. So Mac, you know, I want to bring you on for sure. Is we want to know how you've reached where you're at, how you've been successful and the difference that you're making and, you know, what's some purpose behind it. But we want to know how you got there. It seems that we don't get a lot of information out there or, you know, what's the path that you took to end up where you are now? Because oftentimes we look at all of these individuals throughout, you know, our country and the world, and we see the end result of their success, but we don't see the journey that probably wasn't so smooth sailing as we think it was. So lots of fun stuff ahead.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the new show. I do encourage listeners to check out your current show, which I know you're still producing. I found it to be very valuable, and there's a lot of good stuff there. So I know Spark of Genius will be just as good. Now, people can learn more about your podcast, your book, and your work by visiting your websites. There are two. The first one is it's drckbray, that's BRAY.com, Dr. CK Bray. And then the second one is adaptioninstitute.com. We'll include those links, to both sites in the show notes and in the article on the website about this episode. CK, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to catch up with you and great to talk with you.
It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to staying in touch. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Well, that was a terrific discussion with Dr. CK Bray. One message that came through loud and clear for me was the importance of preparation. In other words, don't walk into the interview room winging it. Have a plan, know who you're going to meet if possible, and look for ways both to deal with your own anxiety and to connect with the people that you're going to talk with. And above all, have stories that illustrate what you can do for the employer. I love the way CK took a shopping list for a cookie and turned it into a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's very powerful, and I hope that you'll consider doing that as well. And also, before your next interview, make sure you do the preparation. And our new guide, 100 Behavioral Interview Questions You Need to Know, will help you get ready. You can't prepare for every behavioral interview question, but there is a formula you can use to craft a great response and connect with the interviewers. So get your guide today. It's maxlist.org/questions. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Find Your Dream Job. And join us next Wednesday. Our special guest will be Maren Roberts-Huntley. She'll explain how to nail your first impression. Until next time, thanks for letting us help you find your dream job.